Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. This show is not like any other show out there. We tell the truth. No one controls what we say, and we're on a mission to expose what is going on in government on both sides of the aisle and in between. You can go to katedalyradio.com for more podcasts of the show, and thanks for listening in.
It starts now.
My name is Kerry Porch. I'm a satellite uplink technician. I'm a contractor at the CNN Washington, D.C. Bureau. I decided to wear a hidden camera. I decided to secretly record the 9 a.m. rundown call meetings, and it's basically run by Jeff Zucker, the president of CNN.
We're moving towards impeachment. I mean, we shouldn't pretend, this is going one way, and so all these moves are moves towards
calling Fox News fake news and a propaganda machine. And with what I saw, I'm like, that's pretty much what CNN was. Like, it's just pumping out propaganda.
That was an interesting clip. CNN whistleblower, I guess you could call him that, who had secretly recorded Jeff. Jeff Zuckerberg, who was talking about how the focus of CNN, who's this, you know, president of CNN, focus of CNN would be solely on impeachment. He was going to go after it and after it and after it. And that he was calling out Fox News, for being fake news. And I guess CNN, the message there was that CNN was real. And it's all fake. That's the problem. It's all fake. But, you know, that's what we get in America. And so he secretly recorded him supposedly at these meetings, the kind of the morning meeting where you actually start kind of identifying where you want to go with the news and what the agenda is going to hold. And it was basically focus on impeachment. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. So glad to have you. And of course, Uncle Milty isn't with us today. He was feeling ill. And so we wish him the best, prayers for him, and hope he gets better soon. And I asked Brian Hyde from Loving Liberty, if you haven't caught this show, you have to catch this show. It's a great show. Brian puts a lot of work into this show and in telling the truth. And Brian Hyde joins me from Loving Liberty. Hello, Brian.
Kate, it is an honor to come on your show to talk about my book on erectile dysfunction. I'm kidding.
Man, I am just dying laughing right now. You have no idea. For so many reasons. I so appreciate you coming on. You know, it's so funny. I actually started out radio with Brian and back in the day. And my first day I was thrown on Brian's show actually, and I was to be his co-host and I didn't know anything. And it was such an interesting evolution, metamorphosis, I'll call it. That sounds prettier. But it was definitely quite a time for me because I had been such a, I think more or less a neocon and not a driven one, just more or less whatever the news said, I believed it. And this clip, and it took me a long time to find truth and identify truth and talk about truth. And so I commend Brian because Brian was the one that really opened up that world to me. And I'd probably be a very different radio show host now had not been for Brian. So thank you, Brian.
You are very kind. And I got to tell you, though, you were perfectly in line with where I think most people are at some point in their lives.
Yep.
I have been there, too, where we embrace statism because we believe, hey, it's really the only way that the world makes sense, the only way that there can be order. Mm-hmm. If the state's not in charge of it, then it's probably out of control.
Right.
And reluctantly, I came around to the understanding that, no, there's a lot that we can solve on our own. But like you, I was very resistant the first few times people suggested that maybe there's another way. No, there's not.
There's only one way. Yeah, that's so true, though. And it really is hard when you, and Brian and I talked about this earlier, when you're dialing it down to principle, what is the core principle of what you believe in? Because that's going to lend to your worldview and how you view the things being done right now. This is why it's easy to talk about some of the headlines, because the headlines dial in on back to going back to that core principle. And to use an example that I'll use again, I'll never forget the moment on the show when we talked about seatbelt laws. And for many of you out there, and I still get calls about seatbelts, so we have to have a seatbelt law, otherwise no one will be safe. And I remember I was talking, I had some little kids over my house, my little nieces and nephews, and they were telling me that my son had gotten in the car and hadn't put on a seatbelt right away. And I said, well, he's a grown man. He gets to do what he wants. And they were very centered on, no, he has to wear it. We have to make him. And I thought... It's a law. And I said, he will choose. And he does wear it. But that doesn't, that's not the point. The point is that he's a grown man and he can do what he wants to do. He's in his 20s. You're not going to tell him what to do. And so we had this great talk about it. It was a really cute talk, actually. But I'll never forget that moment of having to go through the anger of, but I want everybody to be safe. Well, that's not your choice. You need to let everybody have the room to choose. And it needs to be about freedom. And I really had to start dialing into what my principles actually were. What did I really believe in and why? And does it really make sense? And I think that was the gift of those first few years of radio with Brian that actually helped me really identify what I was about and what I wanted to seek out on the radio. And Brian does this on his Love and Liberty show as well. And I encourage you to check out that show and podcast, because it really is good. And he puts a lot of work into that. Love and Liberty is the name of it. But I'll tell you something. In this time, in the age and time that we are right now in 2019, it is quite crazy. And I saw Thomas Massey today saying, look, if you want to go to war, everybody, then, go tell Congress to declare one. And I thought, yay, at least he's pointing to the right, channel, because that's that is truly what we've lost in America. Did you want to comment on that, Brian?
I don't want to see America involved in more wars. But I would say if we're going to be involved, it does need to go before Congress. Yep. That's what the rule book, the Constitution, says. And you have to wonder why, of all the different ways that the founders could have placed that war-making power, why did they place it in the hands of a deliberative body rather than just one person?
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to point fingers at Trump, but some people may wake up grumpy one day. I don't feel – where's the red button? Right. I'm going to push the button. Mm-hmm. Whereas you put it before a deliberative body, they have to debate it. They have to represent. And of course, it's the deliberative body that actually is accountable to the people every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Seems to me that that would be the better way to go, because they may make the decision to go to war, but if it's not the right thing to do, they'll be held accountable for it.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was asking Brian, what were your thoughts on Trump? And I'd like to actually like you to share that, because I think a lot of people, I get asked this all the time. You'd be so surprised. Do you, Brian? I mean, I'm constantly, what's your thoughts on Trump? Because everybody's trying to figure him out. And so I'd love for you to share what your thoughts are.
Truth be told, I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about him every day. And it's not that, I've turned my back on him and I won't let him in my brain. I don't give that much space in my brain to things political. And it's not because I'm better than anybody else. It just doesn't give as much value to me. Plus, I've seen people, and maybe you know some people like this, for whom Trump is living rent-free in their brains all the time.
Right.
From the time they wake up till they go to sleep, they're constantly, oh, that guy, oh, everything they watch on TV reminds them, oh, that's right, we hate him. And I think that's not a very happy way to live.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, Trump has surprised me pleasantly since he was elected. I didn't think that, I couldn't vote for him, so I didn't think that he was, the best choice, that America had. But he has done some things right, and I'm very grateful for that. There are some ways he's frustrated the ongoing growth of government. One of these things, the endless wars.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, he's frustrating a lot of people within the establishment, Republican and Democrat. I don't think he's perfect. I don't think he is going to single-handedly save the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
But he is definitely applying friction to the efforts of the people who have been trying to run this thing into the ground for a long time. And I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah. Yes, we've had a lot of decades of unrest, and that was by design. And that's the hardest thing, I think, for some people to grasp is that military-industrial complex is alive and well, and they have to have a reason to be. And even Trump was citing he said, I got all these guys around me, the military complex, and I'm glad that he's identifying it. I'm glad that he's saying that. We've never had a president that just really kind of outed all of this with the media and so forth. So
it's telling too that Trump. I thought when they were getting considerations for the Nobel Peace Prize here recently, one of the I think it was the Babylon Bee had a thing. Well, Trump hasn't killed enough people or hasn't bombed enough people to qualify for a Nobel Peace Prize.
Ooh,
and I was like,
ouch! Sometimes humor is just the best way, man, to really draw a lot of attention to that. And I so appreciate you talking about that, because so many people have questions, you know. And I understand, but I loved your point about not being the focal point all the time. And the media is king of that. They would like to make him the focal point all the time. And we have so many other things to worry about, like Congress, like all of the bodies that are supposed to be doing things and not doing things that they continuously do. So,
yeah, we're supposed to believe that everything that happens in Washington, D.C. is the most important stuff in the universe.
Right.
And to the politicians and to the people in the media who, you know, kind of are parasites who piggyback off the politicians. Well, it is. But to the rest of us, you know, you get out here in so-called flyover country and you'll find people going about their lives. And we are actually quite happy and have very little contact, if any, with what's going on with the policymakers in the Beltway. And I think that's how it's supposed to be.
I think so, too. And they're very, very busy, it seems. In fact, there was a clip where they were actually using something that happened in Kentucky, but they were using it as the Syrian war. Do you want to talk about that for just a minute?
Yeah, for anybody who's ever thought, I try to explain the fake news to my friends and they just don't get it. Here's one of the best examples of it. Of course, the press, which would be equally against Trump if he was the one initiating some kind of military action in Syria. Mm-hmm. But because he's saying, no, we need to get our troops out of there. Well, look at what he's doing. He's betraying the Kurds. And they took footage showing this intense machine gun fire and explosions and smoke. And I mean, it is just it's frightening to see. And said, this is the Turkish military massacring Kurdish civilians.
Yeah.
Except it was actually video footage from the Knob Creek machine gun shoot, which takes place in Knob Creek, Kentucky, every year. And it's a big deal. I've wished I could go because it sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, they put on a huge show. Yeah. They put on a huge pyrotechnic show, and it's the exact same footage from 2017 from that event in Kentucky.
But it was portrayed as something that it was not. And for a news-making organization, I mean, how many places are they supposed to have fact-checkers and people who can we back this up? Do we know for sure this is right?
Right.
And now they're just, apparently the authenticity has been called into question.
Well, yeah,
but
think?
it wasn't called into question, you know, when you were certain it was making Trump look bad or look evil.
Yes, yes. Because of pulling out a few troops out of Syria, which, by the way, he did not create that mess. That mess came by way of many presidents and deep staters completely involved in that situation, intelligence agencies making that happen. So credit needs to go where credit is due, and it isn't Trump. Anyway, we'll be right back. More with Brian Hyde from Love and Liberty right when we come back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
Hey, let me tell you something.
Uh-huh.
The balance of nature really works, man. I mean, I work constantly on the road, and I put in 60 hours in 4 days, 15 hours a day, and I'm telling you, this stuff works. I don't get sick. I have plenty of energy. I'm 46 years old. I'm an old man, and I can't tell you how grateful I am to have this stuff. So I just want you to know that this stuff really works, and I'm grateful that this Dr. Howard guy figured it out. So I'll leave it at that.
Experience the balance of nature difference for yourself. Call or go online now and become a preferred customer, which gives you our best pricing and free shipping. And we'll take off an additional $25 on your first order. This will be a limited time offer, so don't wait. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.
Open now. Call 888-673-1450.
This is the Kate Daly Show.
Spend my days with a woman in kind. Smoke my stuff and drink all my wine. Made up my mind, make a new start. Going to California with an aching in my heart.
Oh, little Zeppelin for you. That's one of the more mellow ones. Welcome back to the Kate Daly Show. Going to California with an aching in his heart. I feel that ache. Trust me. Welcome back to the show. And I just have to get your two cents on this. I really do. I'm with Brian Hyde from Love and Liberty. Milty is out today, and I just have to hear your thoughts on California lately.
It's nuts. You know, all the people driving their electric cars are now finding, well, I can't charge it. Because they turned off the electricity.
Wait a minute.
So all these green things they were doing to save the planet, and yeah. All they've really succeeded in doing is they've eliminated electricity.
So
congratulations.
True. That is so true. I hope people are listening. Oh my gosh. I always wonder what is next with the state, you know, and I'm from the state. I grew up there first 25 years of my life. And let me tell you, it amazes even me, and I grew up there. I'm consistently amazed at how far they are willing to go, and with the poop maps and the all throughout coastal cities, we have the bubonic plague coming back because of the situation of the economy and where they're throwing it. We have all kinds of stuff going on in California, and you know what? It is the incubator test for the rest of this nation, and I just want to say that because there are so many cities that think it can't happen to them. It's not true.
I think Venezuela may be looking at California going, ooh, those poor people.
Exactly.
That must suck. Can we help them? Can we send them something?
That is the truth right there. That is the truth. Oh, good heavens. Yeah, I thank you for sharing your thoughts on Trump. I really do, and I'm with you on that. And I pleasantly applaud when he just makes some of the best moves or questions on Twitter, some of the things that all of us are questioning, and puts it right back at him. And I hope Twitter never stops. I actually love it that we get to hear what he wants to say, and that I don't think it's hit the filter button too much. It's going to a little bit, but I don't think it has too much. I like it.
Are you curious at all about next year's election? I'm just, do you have a gut feeling one way or the other?
Yeah.
Does Trump have this in the bag, or is he vulnerable?
No, I absolutely think he'll have it in the bag. I think that, you know, there's two ways to think about this. And I understand the 5D chess move way. Let me explain. So I do think he'll win. I do think we'll have another 4 years. And I think that sticking it or poking the media in the eye, I think is going to be fantastic. There's going to be some great things that he's going to do. And I actually think he'll unleash it a little bit more in the next 4 years. But the 5D chess move here would be they're playing some very, very weak candidates like Warren and Biden, knowing that they're not going to win unless they had somebody else coming in. Are they fixing it a little bit, making sure, you know, Trump stays in because of some of the things he can do when people go complacent? And this is a very, very unpopular thought. And I think a lot of people's cognitive dissonance may be rocked a little bit with that thought. But having Trump in and having people so territorial about protecting him actually doesn't help the disservice that we do by not always being critically looking at the role of president and also some of the things that are slipping by. And I hope that we don't go into full complacency, because I do think that's probably something that they could take advantage of by putting up a weak component. He's assured the win. And if he does, as much as I want that to happen for what he's able to do, there will be things that get through that I absolutely cringe over thinking that they could get through.
I think the Second Amendment could take a pretty good beating if Trump is reelected.
Right.
And part of the problem here, I'm sorry, I'm going to anger some of our conservative brethren and sisters here, but they look at Trump as some kind of a demigod.
Mm-hmm. And some do.
It's partisanship. Yeah, some do. Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of partisanship that makes it almost impossible. They're so used to defending him that they can't look at it objectively and say, okay, he's right on this, but this is wrong, which, you know, you should be able to do with pretty much any politician. Mm-hmm. He's under so much intense attack and scrutiny all the time, and they're so used to defending him that it's almost reflexive. But I think that is actually kind of dangerous. That's how you get a dear leader Mm-hmm. And that's where mm-hmm. you can see some pretty ugly stuff happen because, you know, who are we to question the dear leader?
Yes. No, I can agree with that. And you're right. I think that we have a hard time looking at it this way. We become very territorial. The reason we become so territorial in my eyes, and this could be different for you, Brian, and of course I'm going to invite callers, 888-673-1450, to be a part of this conversation. If we could stay on this topic, that'd be great. This is the problem, is that because of the things that he's doing that I love, we have a tendency to sort of wrap him up in that alone. And then when we wrap him up in that alone, like you said, we're not going to see some of these other things come through. And they will. They will absolutely come through, just like they have a little bit. They've seeped through. And so in looking at the entire picture, I'm worried that we go to this extreme territorial segue where we're kind of segue into, you know, if he does something that we don't like, it's just a little something we don't like. But I love what he's doing over here. And so keep that up because no other president has done that. We haven't ever seen somebody do that. I don't want us to diminish what is going on. I don't want it to be dialed down into a nothing as like, well, it's a mistake, but that's okay because he's doing all this other stuff. And I see a lot of minimizing. That's what I'm seeing.
My greatest fear is that people will continue to buy into the notion that what's happening in Washington, D.C. really is the most important thing in their lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm not telling them, you know, you have to turn your back on it, but try to gain some perspective and understand that most of your life doesn't really matter who's president.
Yeah.
They're going to do some things right. They're going to do some things wrong. Even Obama did some things right. Mm-hmm. But we give them way, way too much stature, in my opinion,
yes.
to the point where, you know, when there's a rally, I mean, it's like, I don't know, people want to mm-hmm. touch the hem of his garment as he's walking through the crowd. And mm-hmm. I think they've lost sight of what mm-hmm. politicians are supposed to, you know, they're our employees,
yeah.
not our masters. They work for us.
Right.
And we should be primarily the problem solvers in our lives. And politicians should have to patiently wait for us to reach out to them only when all other options have been exhausted and say, is there something that we can do with
right.
government?
Right.
That's how we would approach it from a principled point of view rather than, there ought to be a law.
Yeah, there ought to be a law. Please, more government, please. You know, what you just said, too, about our lives, you know, this is kind of an interesting thought, but we talk all the time about the political parties being the same on the other side of the Washington, D.C. barrier line. You know, as Harry Reid used to say, I can smell them coming, those tourists. I can smell them from afar. So when you get behind that barrier, you'll notice that they work for the same people and that the same people are writing those laws, whether they put it in a Democrat's hand sometimes, and it can be like more against the Second Amendment than they would put it in the hands of a Republican, you are going to get the same line drive that we've had for the last 100 years towards their goal. So both parties work for that same goal. This is why every 8 years or 4 years, you don't get somebody stopping everything that was just done that we complain about and then setting forth a totally different direction. You'll never see it. You'll just never see it. But look at our lives, too. Our lives are the same way. I was just thinking about this as you said that. Our lives are the same way. They might have changed in very small ways, but my life has been my life no matter who is in office, no matter who is president. My life still has been my story, my driven story, and it goes one way, the way I want it to go, regardless. It might be some hindrances here and there. I might get angry here and there about what kind of freedom I've lost, but my life pretty much stays the same. In Washington, they're pretty much going the same direction that the deep state wants them to go, and they will go. And so it is kind of a fascinating kind of little tidbit there, I think, thought.
One of the things that I have really loved about watching your journey to become the commentator that you are and the voice of reason that you are
you've
lost your infatuation with politicians.
You don't
see them as, the answer to all of our prayers. And I think if more people could take that approach or could go through that journey the way you've gone through it, you know, when it really comes down to it, politicians are always willing to say whatever they need to say to get your vote mm-hmm. and to do whatever it takes to get the donations they need to get reelected. That's pretty amoral behavior for someone, you know, to make us go gaga over
yeah.
them.
Or who's in the land of service. You know, if we say that about one more politician, I swear I'm going to bang my head against a wall. Thank you for your service. No, service is doing something for somebody. They're not doing that for us. They're getting paid a very healthy sum to do that. And they're doing a lot of things like, oh, I don't know, wanting to put their name on a bill and for their own career, for their own namesake. And so that works against us because all they're doing is creating more and more government. So it's consider that a service.
The fact that you have politicians who refuse to come on your show and refuse to talk to you, I think is actually a huge compliment that you don't play the game. No. They can't count on you to carry water for them and prop them up and give them that status that they need to maintain the illusion that, oh, my gosh, we couldn't live without this particular congressman or congresswoman.
Yeah, right. And right back at you, too, because I know you do the same thing. And we need some definite conversations in this country about the big picture look, about where we're heading. And what does 5 years from now look like? What do you think 5 years from now looks like, Brian?
That's scary. I don't know. Look. I sent you a message the other day. 5 years ago, you know, gay marriage was discovered to be a constitutional right by the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Look at what's happened in the last 5 years.
It's true.
Right? The whole transgender thing, which now there's more genders than anybody can keep track of. I don't even want to try, let alone try to figure out, am I misusing someone's pronouns or whatever? For crying out loud, it's drag queen story time.
Yes.
In public libraries, grown men in the bathroom, in the women's bathroom.
Yep. Yep.
That's in the last 5 years. I'm a little bit concerned about where the next 5 years may go if we stay on the same trajectory.
No, it's so true. Sex being taught in schools to the tune of you wouldn't even recognize sex ed if you went to class now. All kinds of things, grown men in women's bathrooms. And I'll never forget that text because you said, you know, yay for progress. And that's what it is. It's change for the sake of change. And sometimes we gravitate toward that word because we don't think it change is going to be in the negative. And change is going to be something that is going to be painful for us. This has been a really strange 5 years. When you put it like that, Brian, which I thought was really smart, when you put it like that, look at the last 5 years. Look at all those changes. Oh, my gosh. Who would have thought that?
And you understand this, and I hope your listeners understand this too. This isn't a call that therefore you should be treating anybody in the LGBTQ crowd, poorly.
Yeah.
I think we need to treat each other with love. I think we need to show respect and we need to show patience. I never dreamed that I would be friends with a transgender individual. But about 8 months ago, I attended a Better Angels workshop and they sat me right next to a transgender person. And when I say a transgender person, I mean, this person was a tattooed up, big, bulked up Marine in a former life, but now her name is Tisha, and she's a wonderful person.
Right.
I only found that out after Eric Moutsos and I got the chance to sit and visit with her throughout the day, and we found out we have more in common with this person than we thought.
Right.
And it kind of took some of those barriers down. Now, I'm going to say this with as much tenderness as I can. I think people who are going through those gender issues are probably fighting some kind of a battle in their lives. There's a trauma. There's something that they are battling.
Right.
They don't need anger. They don't need condemnation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I am not duty bound to join in the delusion and to tell them, oh, what you're saying or what you're thinking is absolutely right. I'm just there to love them. I'm just there to give them the kind of love that I would want to receive if I was struggling with something immense.
Amen to that. People don't realize that I chose a gay business partner. I had a gay business partner for years, and I love him. He's fantastic. I have a gay best friend. People don't realize that either. But yes, I think that you can have, I can have all of kinds of people in my life and still maintain who I am, and they accept me for me, and I accept them for them. It's very easy to do. I love what you just said. We'll be right back. More with Brian when we come back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Make away the flag. Cool the red, white, and blue. And when the band plays Hail to the Chief, cool, they point the cannon at you.
Now. Hey there, welcome back. Kate Daly Show here. I'm so glad that you're listening in today, the Kate Daly Show. In fact, Uncle Milty's out. I've got Brian Hyde, who I actually started radio with. He's got a wonderful show, Loving Liberty. And Brian's on daily. You can catch his show. Make sure that you're doing that. It's a fantastic show. And Brian joins me. Before I get there, Balance of Nature, make sure that you are going to katedalyradio.com, not only for the podcast. There's lots of 5-minute ones, 13-minute ones, 45-minute ones, all great content that you can listen to and share when I'm not live on the air like we are today, but also Balance of Nature is there. When you get to Balance of Nature, make sure that you're taking that supplement, and all of us need a supplement. I've talked about the problems we have with government and their overreach with our food industry and how many problems we have with the nutrients contained in those foods, and we're not getting the nutrients. You'd have to eat a bushel of potatoes to equal one potato from like 1901. And I'm not joking when I say we have an uphill battle to climb, and balance of nature is how I'm doing that. I take these supplements every day. There's a wonderful fiber drink that goes with it, and it is that amazing. And so I'm urging you that you do need a supplement. Get this one. And when you put in the code Kate, you can get all those savings. And so just because you listen to the show, make sure that you are doing that. It really is a fantastic, clean supplement. Go to balanceofnature.com for all the facts, and you'll get them. They're a very transparent company, and I really like the way they do business. Coming back, I just wanted to make one. I have a thought on what we just left last segment with, and that was talking about what has transpired in the last 5 years, Brian. And by the way, welcome, Brian, to the show.
Well, thank you.
You bet.
Very much.
Thank you very much. Let me say this: all the things that you mentioned that have changed, especially within the gay community, the LGBT community, the transgender community, have all been the politicization of those things, have all been in that direction. And that's why it comes up on the show. You know, like you said, there are many people that struggle. And this isn't about somebody struggling with any of those issues. Because I have friends, former business partner, you name it, people in my life that struggled with that. They came out of the closet. They're living their life. I have no problem with anyone living their life, and neither do you. And I know that about you, because it's just about being nice to people. I'm nice to everybody I meet, and so are you. But what you talked about was the political side of it, because of this. If you're transgender or if you are LGBT, why does it need to be in the classroom all about who you sleep with and why? Why is that? Why is there that incessant need for that? I was reading on the LGBT website how there are only about 220,000 kids in our entire country that are in that type of union, and where they have gay parents, okay? And the message on their own website, LGBT website, main website, was, look, for these 220,000 kids, we need to have a character in every show. We need to be discussing it in class. We need to have it everywhere around them, so these 220,000 kids know that there's somebody like them. And I'm thinking, I'm sorry, what about the millions and millions and millions and millions of other kids? Why is that storyline having to permeate everything in media, everything in Hollywood? And it's because there is a political faction at work, and it has been at work for a long time. So I just wanted to get your quick thought on that before we move on, because I want to make sure people realize that this isn't about somebody going through a struggle. It's about something totally different than that.
Well, if it was just a matter of, hey, we just want to be noticed and not be pushed to the margins of society, I think it's pretty safe to say that was accomplished a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how many TV shows have a gay character in the storyline and so forth. It takes no courage for a person to come out or to stand up for somebody coming out in this time and day. But that's not what's happening. Now it's about we have to destroy anybody who doesn't support this enthusiastically enough. You can't even say, look, I'm just neutral. I just want to mind my own business. Nope. You will clap harder and you will cheer louder, or we will destroy you. And they're trying to garner the power of law to use government force to make that stick.
Yeah.
That's what politicizing things gets you. It turns it into a tribal power struggle.
Yes, yes, and yes. And if you're one of those out there that is striving to shut down anybody that's neutral, anybody standing out there saying, live your life, I don't care, because you aren't cheering loud enough, ask yourself why. What is in it for you? Why are you wanting to do this? There shouldn't be a reason for you trying to do that. That's why I say I'm a respecter of persons. please can you be? You know, the person out there that is trying to annihilate and shut down everybody that doesn't clap, like you said brilliantly, clap harder, clap louder. And that's the problem. That's why I'm always saying, are you going to be as nice as I'm trying to be? Because I'm trying to give everybody room for their life here. I just don't want to be overrun by certain narratives and certain political charges. And so, and I would hope that they would feel the same too. So I love that you the comment on that. Thank you for that. Let's talk about Che. You had an interesting conversation with Larry Reed, and I want you to discuss that for a moment. Good old Che.
Yeah, Larry Reed is the president emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education, and he is one of my heroes. And I mean that in the sense that this is a guy who, for the last 50 years, has been a very outspoken, principled, and kind advocate of liberty and free markets and individual freedom for everybody. And he also does a marvelous job of connecting the dots between how you must possess character if you wish to live as a free person or as a free society. Sure. They're two inseparable concepts. And he was talking about how a lot of young people today find it very fashionable to wear their Che Guevara shirt, you know, with the Cuban revolutionary on it. And, you know, I get it. You know, fashions come and go. Sometimes it's kind of edgy. I mean, we had, you know, our heavy metal T-shirts and stuff when I was a kid that, you know, made a statement. But there's a huge disconnect in the people who revere him as some kind of a, you know, a figure to look up to and someone that we should aspire to be more like him versus the actual person who he was, which was a murderous revolutionary who hated gays and discriminated against gays and murdered people with the same fervor that the Jacobins did in the French Revolution just because we're right and therefore I have the right to kill you because you disagree. That's not something to look up to.
Oh, I love this. Yes, 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 yes. If you want to tell people just a little bit and take just a few minutes about who he actually was, because why is he landing on a T-shirt in America? What do they not know about him that they should know?
That was one of the questions I asked Larry Reed, because every week when he does his show, The Reed Hour, there's a segment where he introduces us to a hero. And oftentimes it's heroes that we've never heard of before, but they really are people who've done heroic things. Last week he was talking about Che Guevara, but he says, now, he's a hero to some, but not to me, which I thought, okay, good distinction. And he couldn't really pinpoint, when did it become so fashionable? I guess as collectivism, whether it be in the softer form of socialism or the more totalitarian form of communism, has made its way into our nation's college campuses through the, you know, the baby boomers, the hippies of the 60s and 70s, the counterculture. Now they are the ones who are administrators. They're the ones who are professors. That's where this adoration of totalitarian figures and collectivist figures like Che come into being. And the kids, not knowing their history, not knowing, you know, how many people were actually put into early graves by the people who carried out these ideologies, they don't understand the history behind it. So they think it's about fairness. It's about looking out for the little guy. But they don't recognize the suffering, the economic impoverishment. I mean, have you ever asked yourself, why are all the buildings in socialist countries so butt ugly?
Yes.
It's because no one has any incentive to create something beautiful. There's no sense of ownership. There's no sense of pride. Everything is owned by someone else. You just do what you're told. You apply the plaster here. And you know, and that's what I do. And in return for that, they give me enough to barely live on. And maybe I can stand in line for some beets later.
It's so true. Just look at Venezuela. Exact same thing. And what did they go after first? Property. They went after property. Yeah.
I saw a video today of the inside of a Venezuelan supermarket. The only thing on the only thing on the shelves, there was about, I don't know, a dozen and a half bottles, 2 liter bottles of Coke. Every shelf was empty. The lights are all on. There's people walking around in there, mostly with their hands in their pockets. But there was nothing in that store. Can you imagine the hopeless feeling it must be? Well, go check and see if any food arrived today. And there's nothing.
Yeah. Do you ever find it amazing that they'll take these people and then prop up kind of this new history behind them and that people don't question? They don't even question it.
They don't question, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You would think after you've been hungry long enough, you'd start saying, you know, maybe this isn't all it's cracked up to be. And I don't know why people hold on to that hope. But it's the disconnect from history. I think it was Cicero who talked about those who don't know what came before them will forever remain as children. And that's true 2,000 years ago. It's as true today. If you don't know how we got here from there, then you're going to be dependent on someone else telling you. This is what it all means. And if that person means to do it in such a way that it gives them the chance to consolidate power over you and your life or your property or your earnings, they're, of course, going to spin it in that way.
Oh, I love that. In fact, that reminds me of a topic that I love it when you cover this, and that's the fourth turning. Do you want to just describe those cycles briefly and what's coming?
Sure.
Yeah, I love this.
Look, it's a meaty book, but I strongly recommend it for anybody who is has a sense that right now we are on the precipice of something very momentous. And I say that with the understanding that these turnings that are referred to by these historians, Strauss and Howe, I'll give you their full names. It's William Strauss and Neil Howe. One of them is deceased now. But the fourth turning talks about the cycles of history and what it tells us about America's rendezvous with destiny. There have been previous turnings in which we've seen a cycle very much like the seasons play out in America. You could see it through the American Revolutionary period, and you know, winter and the crisis that is winter is followed by springtime, which is a high, and everybody's happy and things are new and they're fresh. But then summer comes and there's a little discontent and a little start of an unraveling, and then fall comes. That's the third turning, when you get into fall and things start to come apart, faith in institutions start to crumble. It's not specific events that are predictable in these turnings, but the attitudes of the people. And then comes a crisis, which sets in motion this fourth turning, which is like winter. And on the other side of that winter storm, and it's almost always a storm that includes massive economic upheaval, domestic and civil unrest, and usually war. And we saw that happen after the American Revolution. There's that nice founding period, the expansion westward. Then there's sectionalism and the fighting over slavery and who are going to be slave states and the jockeying. Lincoln is elected. Boom, there's the catalyst, the bombardment of Fort Sumter. And then the crisis was on them. And it didn't end until after Reconstruction. And our country looked very different after that. And the cycle started over. And we had the internationalism and America taking its place on the world stage up until the roaring 20s when things start falling apart again. Boom, the Great Depression, World War II, there's your crisis. How different was the world by the end of 1945?
So different.
And it comes about every 80 to 100, 120 years. Guess what? We're about 80 years down the road, and we are in the midst of that crisis right now.
Boy, I love that. And, you know, this has been a long lesson, because I remember the first time you ever talked about that, kind of being in awe of looking at the cycles and figuring out where we were at right now. And in fact, a guest on Friday, actually, the author I had on Friday mentioned this and was surprised to know that I've actually covered that material or actually with you many times. And I think that we need to be reminded of this. We need to be reminded of these cycles. And I will always applaud when things go right and they go our way. And when we hit these crises, you know, sometimes this is a great opportunity to maybe kind of change some thinking and perspective. This is a great opportunity to then, you know, how many cycles do we have to watch for us to finally understand and get what's going on, right?
Sometimes they turn out very good. Like, you know, the aftermath of the American Revolution and the founding period, I think, was actually a very good thing. Even though slavery still existed, there were it set the motion for that to change down the road. After the war between the states, that was not as good of an outcome. And I would say there was even less of a good outcome after World War II. Look how many people fell under the, you know, the Iron Curtain at the end of that. But the difference is, what will determine whether it's a good or a bad outcome comes down to the character of the people who are living through that turning. So that puts it back on us. It's not a matter of which politician did we put in. What kind of people are we? If we want it to be a good outcome, we have to be the best people with the highest character that we can muster.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Because, you know, as a populace, look how many millions there are of us, over 330 million people. We pick a representative, right? And that person represents X number of people. And if they're doing it poorly, which they are, if they're doing it poorly, does everything hinge on that one guy? It can't. It can't.
Nope.
What about the multitude of the masses? We have got to be able to recognize our own personal accountability and responsibility in this.
And don't discount the fact that if you're living a good life, you're changing the world for the better right where you stand.
That's
and that still counts, even if you don't get a Nobel Peace Prize for it.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. That's so true, because you know, your who you affect in your life then affects generations. I'll never forget the meme of how many generations you have that are going to follow you right now in your life down the road. And if you could see that graph play out, and how many people will be you will have influence on them. You will be able to influence the lives of all of those people in some shape, way, or form. And are you actually doing that? And are you doing it for the better? I love that message.
You're here.
Ah, I love it. Thank you, Brian Hyde. Love and Liberty. Get the Love and Liberty app. And Love and Liberty is a fantastic show. You got to check it out with Brian. And I salute you, my friend. Thank you for joining me.
Take care.
You're awesome. What can I say? Check out his show. And everybody, be faithful, be fearless, and I will see you here tomorrow. And we'll all wish Milty better health, and I want him to get better. It worries me. So anyway, everybody, have a great night. Thank you for listening to The Kate Daly Show. You can go to The Kate Daly Show on Facebook, The Kate Daly Show on Twitter. Happy to see you there. And also message me. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at kate@katedalyradio.com. Go to katedalyradio.com for more podcasts of our live show.